Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Game day for the Canucks. Lots of stuff happening, of course, with the news of JT Miller's indefinite leave of absence for personal reasons. Now joining us to talk about that, to talk about lots more, former NHL player, now a Sportsnet analyst, he is Landon Ferraro. Landon, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot for me and a whole lot for the Canucks.
Awful lot for the Vancouver Canucks going on right now. And I mean, let's start there with JT Miller, right? So who knows when the team found out, but we hear this morning, and you know, we heard reports from morning skate. There was a pretty subdued atmosphere, as you can understand. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in quite this situation, but for a team to kind of suddenly lose a leader like JT Miller, what does that do? How does a team react in a situation like that?
I mean, it's definitely a tough situation, and it's already tough if he was the first guy, coming out of the lineup. But, you know, Besser's already out. You know, we almost, like, at least I almost forget that Demko's still out. Like, it's, you know, you don't hear a ton. So, like, there's so many pieces that just aren't there. But, you know, for the rest of the guys, it's, you know, like, I almost put this, you know, going into the season or going into training camp, like, there's a lot of expectations for this team. They're supposed to be, you know, up in the upper bit of the league and be contending. To be a contending team, you're going to go through, you know, some adversity, and you got to be able to see, like, can the next guy up hold water while you're waiting for guys to come back? Like, it's a sign of, you know, a healthy organization where you can have big pieces go out, but, you know, Baines comes back up. Can he give that little bit extra? He doesn't have to fill the whole void. Everyone needs to take that little step up, but it definitely provides opportunity for especially the bottom six.
Landon, I don't know if you ever found yourself in one of these situations, but we see it a lot where, like, after Nichushkin, for example, was ruled out indefinitely in the playoffs, the Avalanche laid a historic egg, especially given, you know, the experience, the championship caliber makeup of that roster. We kind of saw it with the Canucks in Game 7 against the Oilers, too, after the Brock Besser blood clots news. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation as a player where your team gets sort of an emotional blow on the day of a game and how you have to manage that. But it does seem like when we've seen it in the recent past anyway, even NHLers can sort of struggle to manage their emotions the next game, especially that night.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you have to be professional. You got to be able to push past that. But there's always the human element. Like, that's a big piece out of their room, and not just on the ice as someone that they really look to. But you can tell by the way guys talk about JT, how the coaching staff talks about JT. Like, it's not just your average good player in the league coming out of the lineup. It's hard. And the hardest part, you know, I haven't been in a situation quite like this where, it's a bit more up in the air of what's going on. But, you know, at the same time, like, the noise does get to a dressing room from time to time, and you become so focused on the story as well that you stop kind of, like, you take your eye off that prize just a little bit, and the margin of error in the NHL is so small, even if you're playing a team that's, you know, towards the bottom of the lineup, let alone, or bottom of the league, let alone, you know, one all the way at the top and, you know, the best goalie in the game. Like, it's very easy to get sidetracked, but, you know, this is an opportunity again for them to show that, you know, we've been through a lot this year and we are learning from things. And it can be a game where, yeah, you've lost some skill players out of your lineup. You know, can you bring it back to basics and just put in a solid full team game that, you know, you're going to need everyone to really pull their own weight here. You can't have any passengers when the big boys go out.
And one of the things we heard from Rick Tocchet today, you know, speaking more on the hockey side of JT Miller's absence, he called him the FU in the team, right? And I think we all intuitively understand what Rick Tocchet's talking about there when you watch JT Miller play. And, you know, one of the things Tocchet said was, well, no one's going to match exactly what he does in that regard, but can we get, you know, 5 to 10% extra from everyone in the lineup? How difficult is it if you're one of those players who's still in the lineup, right, and you think, okay, I have to compensate a little bit to bring a little bit of what we're missing with JT, how tough can that be to do as a player to kind of, okay, I got to find that extra element to my game that maybe I normally don't have?
You know, it is tough, but I don't think it's about trying to add a part to a game, you know, trying to take something that JT does and, okay, I'll try and take that piece and all that. Like, at the end of the day, you're a different player. You have a different skill set. You're able to do different things. And that's why it's so important that, you know, I like how Tockett said, like, can we get that extra 5, 10% out of guys? You know, it's a bit of what we were talking about just before there of, like, everyone needs to really get dialed in. Every board battle becomes a bit more important. Every 50-50 puck, like, that's where I see that 5% coming from. It's being an overall, as a team, hard to play against. You're going to, you know, if you turn a puck over or they're breaking out of their end, you're going to have to go through five of us, not two of us, because we've lost three forwards on the forecheck. Like, it's things like that where you just really need to make sure, you know, you're back checking. You don't stop at your blue line on the back check. You stop in the house, you know, between the hash marks on the inside. Like, just all those little things that, you know, you talk about as a younger player going through junior and learning the pro game to training camp when you're trying to, you know, kind of get everyone's minds back into it. That's how I almost would look at this game, is like, we need to make sure that our basics are set and then the rest of our game can come from there. You know, it's tough, but, you know, you don't want the next 18 skaters to be trying to be JT Miller now. Like, they're not, and that's okay. But you have to find your piece where you can add that little bit extra, just being a little bit harder and not make, you know, any real easy, you know, easy offense come against you. Like, everyone has to go through the team.
Landon, the Rangers power play in particular, it poses a real threat tonight. They've got five guys that have been together now for three seasons, ever since Trocheck joined them. What sort of advantages is that level of, does that level of continuity give a sort of a power play unit, and sort of affiliated, when you're the Canucks and you're going to have to replace a guy whom the power play is often kind of like run through as sort of a quarterback off the half wall. How does that sort of interaction, the Rangers stability versus sort of the Canucks needing to figure it out, how big a mismatch is that going into tonight's game?
It can be a very big mismatch, to be honest. Like, it's the chemistry of a power play takes time. And once you have kind of found your right pieces, and you're right, like when Trocheck got there, that was kind of that one piece they were still missing from that power play to make it all work. And there's really no way to substitute length of time and that many reps together. Like, I would almost equate it to, you know, Daniel and Henrik Sedin on the ice together. They've played their entire lives and they just knew where the other one was. They didn't even have to look. Like, that spot was already there. That's kind of what this power play is. Like, they've been together so long that even if a lane looks taken from your eyes, your stick is, you know, 3 feet to your right or to your left. Like, you know that lane's there just off instinct, and knowing that, you know, if they're throwing it down to, you know, call it Kreider on the side of the net, like, you know that he's going to pop off even if he's not there right now. Like, it's that type of chemistry that makes it work. And then on the flip side for the Canucks, you know, you move from, you know, a morning skate, at least they move Pettersson over to Miller's spot. DeBrus takes the goal line where Pettersson was. Lekkomäki's still in the middle and Suter on the far side. Like, those are very different pieces from where they were. Like, Pettersson has really found his game, and a lot of it looks from being on the goal line. Well, now he's going to be asked to carry, you know, most of the load with Quinn Hughes on the power play, setting up all their plays, trying to get shots through. Like, it's a completely different mentality. Even though they're going to say that we have the same mentality, players are in different spots. You have to really make kind of, or find your new way of going about it. You're going to need Pettersson to really demand the puck and be hard on it on that half wall, because everything's going to be running through him off the side. Like, it's a lot more they're asking of him. And obviously he has the skill to do it. and he needs to carry on that, the player we've seen in the past, couple weeks here.
Yeah, and Pettersson, I mean, I think you're right on about the power play, but in general, with JT Miller out, he's going to be asked to do an awful lot more, right? To try. Now, obviously, it has to come from the whole team with a player like JT Miller, but if there's one player you can point to and say they're really going to need to step up in his absence, it's Elias Pettersson playing down the middle. As you said, the goal's starting to come. You know, he's got a couple of nice bounces in there as well. His skating looks a lot better to me than it did early in the season. Are you seeing enough signs from Pettersson that you think, you know, he's got a chance to step up and be that difference maker in Miller's absence?
I really do think he can right now. And all of the, like what you just said are all very true, but I think the biggest piece for him is like, he is demanding the puck now. Like he's not going into, we were talking about it last week. Like he's not going into battles, like 50-50 pucks, kind of doing that bit more of a poke and hope. And, and by that, I mean, to poke and now you can just, fly by and there's an easy offensive chance. Like he's putting himself into those fights and he's coming out with the puck more times than not. Like he's going to need to continue that to keep up, what he's kind of turned himself into in the last couple weeks again. But you're right. Like they're going to need him to really kind of take over that leader up front. Like there's, there's no one to defer it to anymore. And I'm not saying that he is looking to defer it, but at the same time, like it's a very important point. Like he needs to step up and take the reins. And yeah, he might not be the most vocal person, but doing it on the ice is more important. You see your most skilled player putting himself in harm's way to block shots, finishing checks, really battling in on all those 50-50 pucks and board battles. Like if he does all the little pieces right, like everyone on that team notices it, and that'll, help kind of, not that they need to be dragged along, but it's just like you see your best guy doing, you're like, I better be doing my part now. If he can block a shot, I definitely can step in front of one.
Landon, what do you think about the task ahead of a guy like Pugh Suter, who looks slated to play top six center for an indefinite period of time here? He's played well on the wings, especially in the top six, quietly leading this team in goals. But, for much of his time here, he's either been on the wing or sort of fourth line center, occasionally third line center. What did the Canucks need to get from him over the next stretch of games to sort of at least tread water here over the next few weeks?
Just be steady. Like they don't need him to be all of a sudden he's going to jump in and he's going to be kind of that right behind Pettersson being the offensive hero to hold it all together while they're waiting for, especially Miller and Besser to get back. I feel that Suter has done such a good job of being that complementary player. Like all his line mates know what they're going to get out of him. He's predictable in a good way. So I think he needs to definitely carry that on. But, I'd like to see him with the puck be a little more, what's the right word for it? Let me be a little more direct and really know what he's doing with it, because he's going to have to, to a certain extent, he's going to have to drive a line. And, if I'm sitting in that position, of course you don't want to see those, your teammates not in the lineup, but with them out, like this is a major opportunity for him to show whether those guys are in or not, like I can do more for this team. And, that's really all you ever want as a player is opportunity to show what you think is possible, not just what you're told from the media and the coaching staff of what you are today. Like every player is sitting there knowing, if I could just get this chance or this opportunity, I know I can provide more. Well, whether it's in good terms or bad terms, he has that opportunity now. And that's where he's got to really grab the reins and run with it to, to really show that I can do this and I can do it for an extended period, not just, a period here or a game there.
Just continuing on that theme of kind of taking opportunity, running with it, developing, showing what you can do. I look at a player like Atu Ratu, who, has a great camp, makes the team, is playing pretty consistently for them, but not necessarily delivering a lot. He gets his first goal as a Canuck over the weekend. And, I think his game has started to look better. what are the next steps for him, right? How can he go from kind of, okay, AHL guy who's made the jump and now you're playing, to somebody who's really delivering, who's really, you know, got a calling card that keeps him in the lineup night after night?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for all young players that, you know, have been in the American League and now up with the big club is how quickly you get yourself back to close to what you do in the American League. Like watching, especially, you know, early in the year before DiGiuseppe was hurt in a game that I was down there doing, like Ratu, Baines and DiGiuseppe looked like an absolute all-star line compared to the rest of the competition. And the way that Ratu could hold on to pucks, he was very patient with it. He could stand over and allow plays to develop around him. And obviously, like, you're not going to get to that immediately, but he started to, you know, he had the puck go in, but he also had another chance that was, you know, pretty close as well. Like, those are starting to get there. And as he gets those chances more consistently, because he's playing the right way, I feel like he'll start putting it in a little bit. I feel that right now, at least, you know, wait and see what happens with Connor Garland, if he's going to be able to make the game tonight. His wife's having a baby today. Mm-hmm. But with him out, Ratu's now the net front on the second power play unit. Like, again, like, those are opportunities that aren't there when the team is healthy. So, yeah, you can take that moment of, you know, we're definitely going to miss JT Miller and Besser and all these guys, but you also now get to put a young player in a situation that you haven't seen him in. You know, do you find something there that you're like, you know what, like, that actually really works, and that might be a way to, you know, reward him with another minute and a half of ice a game if he, you know, can do this at the net front. And we can start saving some minutes for other guys. Like, you just don't know, and that's where, you know, as bad as the situation is, you know, it's not exactly what the Canucks want to be seeing is top players going out. You use it as education and you use it as an evaluation, really, of what can these players do when we elevate their roles a little bit.
What do you look for early on in a game as a player in sort of a shorthanded situation like this? Like, what are you looking for from yourself, from your teammates, just to sort of drag a group into a fight or sort of give everyone a smelling salts wake up as the puck drops and a team sort of facing as much adversity as this team will be this evening?
I think the biggest important thing right now is the first four shifts. Mm-hmm. Like, as all the lines touch the ice, like, you need to make sure that everyone understands we're not, obviously, if the chance is there, you're going to put the puck in the net. That would be amazing if you get one real early. But more importantly, it's letting the other team know that, you know, they see the lineup. They see that, you know, this could be an easier night for us. It might be a little bit of a point night. You make sure those guys know instantly that it's not going to be an easy night. We might have taken a little skill out of the lineup, but you're still going to have to get through us every single time you touch the puck. And you let them know it's going to be a hard night. And then before you know it, now you're into it. You have the other team actually realizing this isn't going to go as we hoped it was. Like, that is the best case scenario start for the Canucks tonight, I think.
Just one last one, Landon, for you. The Susie Myers pairing obviously has come under a lot of scrutiny. They're having a tough start to the season. I don't think there's any debating or hiding that at this point. If you could isolate it to, like, one thing they can do differently on the ice to just start turning things around a little bit, start moving the needle in the right direction, what would you say?
I would say move their feet. Right now, I feel that, you know, I'm definitely not the only ones that seeing this, mm-hmm. but, you know, they get the puck in the defensive zone, and it's almost just the default of try and throw it hard off the glass and just get it out of here. And that shows a bit of their confidence isn't there. They know how it's going right now, and they're not happy with it either. But, you know, I just look at it from my experience of when I'm not playing well, my feet would stop moving because now I'm trying to find the play. Instead of as soon as that touches your stick, you take your first couple steps. Now that gets your entire body engaged. Now you're feeling that, you know, you're on the upper hand instead of trying to make a play off it, but you're off your back foot all the time. Like, it's amazing what literally two steps can bring into a player's game. It just engages them that much more. So, you know, they're big they do skate well. It, you know, has been a little bit of a, you know, a bit of a mess, a little bit at times skating wise, but like those are two players that are lanky or long. They cover distance. Now it's about, once you make that good poke check, can you get on your toes, move your feet? Now you can make the next play. And it's not just a flip off the glass because your feet are buried into the ice. Like, I think that would be the quickest solution to at least get their games moving a little more.
Landon, really, oh, you got one more?
No.
Okay. Landon, really appreciate it. Thank you, as always, for making time for us. We'll chat again soon.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Thank you. That is Landon Ferraro.
I was gesturing to you, like, that was really interesting. That was a good answer.
We're demonstrating our patented chemistry.
I was like, we always know what the other one's thinking. Exactly. I was like, hey,
always on the same page.
I was like,
Grant has another question.
I was like, oh, I like that theory about the Susie Myers pair and how to get them moving. That's good. Strong stuff from Landon.
Strong stuff from our guy Landon.
And weak stuff apparently from your boy.
Well, it is a good point too, because I think with those types of players, we always think simplify, right? Simplify, make the simple play.
Yeah. No. But,
like, you, that gets you into trouble. If you're only ever, as soon as you get it, simple play, simple play, simple play, like, that's bad.
Well, so it's like when I talk about this a lot, the feeling pressure as a defender, mm-hmm. right? The feel for pressure and the ability to make the play. You don't actually have to be the fastest. You know who's good at feeling pressure but didn't have a single hesitation move in their bag ever was Luke Shen.
Mm.
And Luke Shen's answer was 5-foot passes. Just like quick 5-foot passes, find the outlet, quick 5-foot pass, get back into position, then you make the pass, you get the pass back, you make the pass with time. Right? Because going glass and out is very much like being an NFL quarterback under pressure and throwing the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
Except in hockey, you can't throw the ball away. It comes back right at you at 100 miles per hour. Right? So I do think he's onto something. They have to find a way to make the plays. They have to find a way to solve problems when exiting their own zone. And by the way, these are two guys we've seen do it at a decent level anyway.
That's the thing. They definitely, they're not elite, obviously, but they have it more in their game than they're showing right now.
The problem is that Myers actually can be really good at it. Like, one area that Myers in particular excels at, and you see it a lot, is he surfs the blue line, mm-hmm. by which I mean he'll squeeze a puck carrier and force a quick turnover, usually with his length. And how many times do you see it? You see, like, I bet you can think of like 10 or 15 goals like this over the course of the last few years, where like, Myers surfs the blue line, forces a turnover, and then he's coming back at the opposition with speed, and the Canucks actually have like a chance off of it. You see it fairly regularly, like not every game, but you see it two or three times a month from him, and you see it more from him than you see from most NHL defenders. Like, this is a guy who can move the puck. And Susie, we've seen be a reliable puck mover in his own right, too. Not a dynamic puck carrier, but a reliable puck mover. I don't know why it's not working, because they both have the ability to do it. We've seen them do it together, even.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it last year. So, it's an odd one, but I loved that answer from Landon.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of a smaller scale thing of what was going on with Pettersson earlier, right? Where it's like, you're so focused on making the safe, reliable play, right, that you never try to look for something a little bit more difficult, and then as a result, you're never making effective plays, right? Because you have to be willing to do those, take those chances and do that extra little bit from time to time. Okay, we're going to take a break here. We got another guest coming up on the other side, Johnny Lazarus from Daily Faceoff. He covers the NHL as well as the Rangers specifically, so we'll get his thoughts on the Rangers, the Canucks opponent tonight. Lots of interesting stuff happening out east as well, between the Bruins, Ovechkin scoring and then getting injured last night as well, so maybe we'll do some league-wide stuff with Johnny as well. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It is Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks taking on the New York Rangers tonight at Rogers Arena. For more on the Rangers, as well as maybe some other Eastern Conference NHL stuff that's going on, he covers the NHL for Daily Faceoff. He is Johnny Lazarus. Johnny, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
Thank you, guys. I'm good. I imagine it's a crazy day in Canuckland, and curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this whole JT Miller leave of absence. Obviously, you got a feel for the player, right? So,
yeah,
curious what it's been like for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's been a pretty wild day. The news certainly came completely out of left field. Now they don't, you know, they're already missing Brock Besser. They're already missing Thatcher Demko. Now JT Miller out indefinitely. We don't know a lot about what's going on, but I mean, there are already people concerned. I'll tell you this much about the Canucks start to the season, and now they're facing a really good Rangers team. And I think the fan base's mood going into this one is pretty pessimistic. I'll tell you that much, Johnny.
Yeah, no, I feel for you guys too. And I did see, I heard from Rick Tocchet that Connor Garland might be having a baby tonight too,
yep.
So he might be out tonight. You know, there's all this stuff going on. It seems like in Vancouver, and you know, obviously it's all stuff that you don't love talking about. But hopefully the Canucks can put together a good performance tonight.
Yeah, so from a Rangers perspective, I mean, just kind of looking at it from afar, it seems like, you know, business as usual for the Rangers, right? You know, points percentage up over 700. Oh, Shesterkin's the best goalie in the league, or one of the best goalies in the league. You know, Artemi Panarin's racking up points. Is that pretty much close enough? Like, this is the New York Rangers, a well-oiled machine at this point that we've gotten used to seeing in the regular season over the last few years?
I'm honestly going to say no.
All right.
But I'm a very harsh critic of this team. And, you know, I think most fans would agree with me, though, where, you know, I look at this team, and obviously from the peripheral, everything was great. But this has been a bit of a disaster. And I'm sure you weren't really expecting that. But, you know, being as transparent as possible, I have not been all that impressed by this year's Rangers team.
Yeah, well, the defense in particular has fallen off the last 10-game segment, let's say, Johnny. I mean, they're permitting a ton of shots here. Shesterkin sometimes makes it difficult to see the defensive gaps, but there are defensive gaps in this team's recent form, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty spot on right there. You know, the Rangers, well, the biggest concern right now,
thanks,
in
bud,
November has been the lack of scoring, though, for the Rangers in the month of November. You know, power plays at 25%. Usually it's like, you know, up around the 30s, you know, that first unit has always been really strong. And the Rangers are scoring under 3 goals a game in November. You know, this is a team that has a lot of offensive firepower, and it hasn't really been that way over the past few games. They've been struggling to generate. I think a lot of that is because they've been hemmed in their own zone. And I think that's something that, like, you know, I don't know where to find the stat on how many shifts the Rangers spend in their own zone versus in the opposing team zone. But I guarantee you they'd be toward the bottom five of the league if there was a stat that read that.
So what, you know, with the scoring in particular, what's gone wrong for the New York Rangers? I mean, we're so used to them being this kind of high-flying outfit. Why has that dried up, at least temporarily, here early in the season?
Well, it feels like there's one line that really scores all the goals. Again, like, Pierre Laviolette for the past few games, he went back to the normal lines in the last, like, two games. But before that, there was, like, a 3-4 game little window where he switched up all the offensive lines and nothing good came from it. And I think, you know, that was just to try to wake up Mika Zibanejad a little bit. And, you know, Zibanejad has had a pretty rough go in the early parts of the season, but, you know, shifting up the lines, didn't necessarily work. So it's been really odd. And obviously losing Filippito in the last game, who I thought has been their most consistent forward, is also going to be a huge loss. You know, now you're looking at a third line of Johnny Brodzinski, who I really love. Like, you know, he's a solid player, fine player. I don't think he's an every night third liner, with Will Cooley and Kaapo Kakko. And, you know, Filippito just makes those two so much better than Brodzinski does. And Cooley and Kakko, like, while they're a fine third line, they've outscored opponents pretty well. Like, I think it was like 12-0 or 13-0 when Hedl was in. But outside of that line and the Trocheck, Lafreniere, Panarin line, you know, Zibanejad, Kreider, and Smith don't really score much. The fourth line does not really chip in much. So it's been a little bit tough outside of, you know, the third line and what is really the first line.
Johnny, as much as the Rangers' defense has trended in the wrong direction, that this power play remains, in my estimation, the best in the league. I mean, I just think they're insanely well-oiled. They've obviously had some success. They're not maybe unequivocally in that sort of Oilers tier yet, although the Oilers haven't been particularly good in the early going. But what's sort of powering that again this season? Why does it look like they've gone up even another level?
Well, I think Adam Fox is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best, you know, if not the best power play quarterbacks in the league. And I say that because there is an argument to be made that he doesn't necessarily create the scoring chances for himself like a Makar and Hughes do. You know, I think Quinn and Kale are two of the best skaters in the entire league, let alone the blue line. And they create a lot of chances for themselves, and they can put the puck in the net themselves. Obviously, you look at Fox's stats right now and notice he hasn't scored a goal. But I think what makes him such a threat is his ability to just see the ice and see all of his options from the top, where he's got Kreider for a tip in on the goal line. He's got Panarin coming down the strong side, Mika on the flank, and sometimes even Trocheck in that bumper. Like, Fox really does have four really strong options. And he is the quarterback of this power play, but the power play really, and this is an argument I actually had recently. I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts. A power play doesn't always run to the quarterback, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Like, I look at this Rangers power play and I would say Fox is the quarterback, but the power play really runs through Panarin.
Yeah. That's the same in, same in Vancouver with Miller.
Yeah.
It really runs through Miller.
When the power play here has been at its best, it's Quinn Hughes up top, and he does a lot of work too, but Miller is the guy who's been making it happen and making the plays, either scoring for himself or setting other guys up, 100%.
But I think people get that mixed up, right? Like, I think if Panarin isn't really moving his feet or isn't shooting the puck, the power play goes a little dry. When Panarin shoots early to establish that in a power play, I think it puts the PKers on edge a bit, knowing that Panarin does have a really good shot. But then also, you know, once he does shoot that first opportunity, it kind of opens up everything else because Fox isn't much of a shooting threat. So I think it all kind of stems on Artemi Panarin, but, you know, he's the reason why this power play is so good. And I know that was kind of contradicting because I spent the first half talking about Fox and then I kind of switched over to Panarin. But, those two are just, you know, we talk about elite dynamic duos in the power play, and Fox and Panarin got to be up there with the rest of them.
Just another New York reporter trying to do the Adam Fox psyop, pretending that he's in the same league as Quinn Hughes. Johnny, come on.
I honestly, you know what? I know them both. I know them both personally pretty well. And I think most Ranger fans would still say Quinn Hughes, to be honest.
Yeah, good.
I really do feel that way. Like, no. I try.
They're both amazing.
I try not to be biased.
I'm just being
a
jerk.
The only person I'm biased about on the Rangers is Lafreniere. Lafreniere is the best player in the NHL. But when it comes to Quinn Hughes and Adam Fox, I mean, you know, Fox is not the best skater. He's not the strongest guy. You know, Quinn has the edge in skating. Quinn probably has the edge in shooting. But I mean this when I say it. There is no defenseman like Adam Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because it's so funny. I just had this conversation like an hour ago, and it like really switched my perspective on him. Adam Fox is not an offensive defenseman. Would you guys disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't.
You think he is an offensive defenseman?
I do not. I think you're right. I think he's I just think he's almost perfect in terms of his on-ice intelligence. I just don't think he drives play or controls games the way, like, Quinn Hughes has the impact that that most, like, most players that have Quinn Hughes level impact are centermen, right? Like, it's and Kucherov and Panarin, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like true drivers, elite engines. There's very few of them in the league. Adam Fox has the impact of one of the best defenders on the planet. It's just there's a difference there, but I think Adam Fox is just like always positionally in the right spot, both on offense and defensively. I do think his impact is more defensive than offensive, but it's total. His impact is total, in my opinion. It's just not at the same tier.
Yeah, that was like the perfect response, because now I can't really make the argument because I was going to say those exact words.
Johnny, we're on the same page. Let's go.
Yeah, but the label around him is like he's this elite offensive defenseman, but you never really see Fox lead the rush. You know, you never really see him create a two-on-one or burn somebody with speed. Mm-hmm. What he really is good at is starting the play in the D zone and then following it up in the offensive zone. But he's not effective if the Rangers don't establish a cycle down low and get the puck to the point, where a guy like Hughes and a guy like Bakar can kind of create their own opportunity with their skating in the offensive zone. They can go from the D zone into the offensive zone and do it themselves, where Fox just makes the other four guys look that much better.
So I'm curious to get your take on this, Johnny. If you were coaching Team USA in the Four Nations tournament coming up in February, you playing Hughes and Fox together, or are you splitting them up?
What's the projection right now? I know it changes like every day.
I don't know. But I mean, it's, those guys are, it's like that. Them.
That's, no,
and
that's the pair. That's the pair.
Them, and then McAvoy would be the other one. But I could see Hughes McAvoy.
No, Hughes Fox is the play.
I could also see Hughes McAvoy just because of size.
Yeah.
And then like what, Fox Werenski maybe?
Something like that, yeah. No,
but isn't Fox just the absolute apex version of Filip Hronek?
That's a good point.
Like, what am I missing? I guess they're both under 6 foot, so that's probably it.
Is Hronek under 6 foot? He feels bigger to me.
He is. He's like 6'1", though. He's not like significantly over 6 foot.
Yeah. He plays big.
He does. He's always in the way. It's a gift. Yeah, he's 6 foot. I mean, he's 6 foot flat, which means he's not 6 foot, by the way, in the NHL. Six foot with skates on.
Yeah, I'm a Jewish kid, and I always say I'm like 5'10 and a half, which is like a Jewish 6 foot.
that's also an NHL.
If 6 foot.
That's also an NHL 6'1".
Same thing. Good to know.
Hey, Johnny, you brought up Alexis Lafreniere. We got to discuss it because there's something pretty special going on. It's not just Lafreniere's evolution here, or the fact, not evolution. I honestly don't even believe it's that. It's that he's getting opportunities that he warrants at this point. But I do think there's an evolution in terms of how sick it is to watch him and Panarin play together. There is a chemistry there that I think is one of the best shows in the league on a nightly basis at the moment. What are you seeing watching them more closely than I am?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of said it right there. Like, everyone last year said that Lafreniere was the beneficiary of playing with Panarin, but I don't think it's any coincidence that Panarin puts up 120 points playing with Lafreniere. You know, Artemi Panarin had his, you know, best career year last year, and the first time those two have really played together. And you'll notice it tonight. Like, there'll probably be two or three chances where they cross the blue line, and one of them will throw a backhanded cross-seam pass for, like, a one-timer on a three-on-three rush. Like, it's not a high-percentage play, but they just know where each other are, and they're so crisp with their puck movement. And the pass that Panarin made the other night to Lafreniere, who's just, like, standing on the post ready to shovel it in, you know, it goes to show when the Rangers – listen, I thought Seattle was the better team at that point of the game the other night, and those two connect for a beautiful goal and changes the entire course of the game. And that's what the Rangers have really relied on in the early going of this season, is that they have such elite talent that they can get away with not playing their best because those two guys and a guy like Trocheck and Fox and Shesterkin and then, you know, the Hedel and Cooley and Kako line, like, they can make one big play that just changes things. But with Panarin and Lafreniere, like, it really is so fun. And I don't want to say it's magical. Last year it felt more magical. This year, you know, it hasn't been as consistent, so it's tough. But, you know, you guys are going to sit there tonight. You're going to watch Alexis Lafreniere, and you're going to say to yourself, how the hell is this kid not on the first power play unit?
Yeah. Well, it's because of that five-man unit. Yeah. It's just so any other team, I think you're building a power play around him.
But isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Oh, it is, but it makes sense. Like, I watched that Rangers top unit, and I'm just like, man, they are pretty much perfectly calibrated for one another. You know, any other situation, I'd be like hammering the coach for not playing Lafreniere on PP1. The Rangers, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like the weirdest little thing that's going on here, because every time, like, Lafreniere actually against Winnipeg got put in Mika's spot for like 7 seconds, and he got the puck, he walked downhill and ripped it low glove and scored, and we're all sitting there like, all right, it's time, and it goes right back to the first unit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of wild, but it's entertaining.
Hey, Johnny, I wanted to ask you also about what for me is one of the most interesting stories in the NHL right now, which is the ongoing potential demise of the Boston Bruins. Of course, they take that 5-1 loss on home ice against Columbus last night. We're all kind of, I think, waiting around to see if that's it for Jim Montgomery. You know, I know they're not a division rival of the Rangers, but there's always a New York and Boston beef when it comes to sports. Are you ready to kind of to call it for the Bruins? They're done as a threat in the Eastern Conference right now.
You know, it's funny. I want to take credit for this because I came up with it myself on our show yesterday. And in the last 15 years, the Boston Bruins have probably led the NHL in expected Stanley Cups. You know, we all have the expected goals, expected whatever. And the expected Cups definitely goes to the Bruins. But listen, you look at this roster and, you know, you can say whatever you want about Jim Montgomery, but like, on paper, is there really a guy out there who's going to get so much more from this team on paper? It's just, it's not that impressive of a lineup. And I know the recency bias with the playoffs and stuff, like, is disappointing. But the last two regular seasons Boston had under Montgomery, like, how much better can those have been? You know, and maybe give the guy a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that it's a tough start, sure. But there still is a lot of time in the regular season for them to figure it out. And for him to get fired after, you know, 6 weeks of poor play when the Bruins have, you know, really had a decent amount of success for the roster that they're putting out there, I don't know. I think it's a little unfair, but sometimes the coach just takes the ball.
Yeah, I just think there's such a track record in the NHL. Like, I agree with what you're saying. Is there a more qualified candidate out there right now that you think is going to come in and revolutionize things? But we also have seen so often that teams make the coaching switch and it jumpstarts their season, right? I think teams have really taken that lesson that, hey, if we're desperate, fire the coach and see what happens.
If you're going to get the bump, get it early.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think firing Jim Montgomery will save Boston's season like it did for Edmonton last year.
Some pretty significant differences in the rosters between those teams, no doubt about it. Johnny, really appreciate it, man. Hopefully this one is an interesting one despite everything going on with the Canucks when they meet tonight. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, Jamie, Thomas, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Always fun.
Absolutely. That is Johnny Lazarus covering the Rangers and the NHL for the Daily Faceoff and weighing in on the Rangers season. And as he was describing it, you know, kind of up and down despite the really strong record. And just quickly on the Bruins, I was very surprised, maybe not even the right word, but just struck. The article from your colleague in The Athletic, of course, Fluto Shinzawa, today, or yesterday, actually, I guess, after that 5-1 loss, who does a great job covering the Bruins for The Athletic, and the headline, and I know, you know, writers don't write the headlines, but it's still a striking headline, firing coach Jim Montgomery is the Bruins' only logical move. That's a pretty heavy, pretty direct headline from your publication, The Athletic. That really struck me when you see that one.
Yeah, I mean, The Athletic goes for the jugular.
You guys aren't the the National Enquirer or the New York Post or anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. It's tends to be a little bit more measured, I would say.
We're not writing Hoffa goes deep after rumors surfaces that the New Jersey Union boss was
that's right
buried in the foundations of Giant Stadium.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, the Bruins, I still buy their black magic. You know, like,
all right.
You know, I saw.
In fact, it just came through that they have fired
Jim Montgomery.
Jim Montgomery, yeah. Yes. And Joe Sacco will be the interim head coach. Yeah. He was already the associate coach there.
As reported, or I saw someone reported. So
it was like one of those kind of random ones. It's like, is this real?
But in hockey, man, it's such a small world. It's totally possible. Yep. Like, I never look at like an internet rumor and completely write it off. I always check. Look, Bruins now going to get a new coach bump. Canucks facing them next Tuesday, a week today. So that's interesting for sure. And, you know, it'll be fascinating to watch here. I just have enough respect for the Bruins black magic that I saw Biznasty compare them to Jason Voorhees. Like, oh, you think they're dead? They're just walking slowly behind you still. I totally buy that. I'm not willing to sell my stock of on Bruins dark magic yet.
Well, and I will say the process has been ugly, and they're a -21 goal differential, which is really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
like that's one of the worst in the league. But they're still just a hair under 500. They're literally, yeah. You know what I mean? Like they're, it's not like they're massively out of it. Like they had the Predators start, right, where the math starts to get dicey for you and everything. Like they're one good 3 week stretch from being solidly in a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. So the process has looked really bad. I think there's a more reason than there usually is to write off the Bruins, but how often have we seen the new coach bump thing work out so, so well for an NHL team? And as much as Johnny was saying, you know, who out there is more qualified than what Jim Montgomery has done, who's going to get more out of them, who knows, man? If there's friction between the head coach and David Pastrnak, and all of a sudden Pastrnak's in a better mood now, that could go an awful long way to fixing what ails a team.
Although Pastrnak needs to get some details in check here. You know, like, Pastrnak has some of the, you know, hallmarks of a guy who needs to, like, just, I do think a new coach is necessary because when I watch the Bruins play, Pastrnak's shift length is too long. It is. It's just too long. And his, like, line changes are lackadaisical. He does some stuff that he can get away with because he's David Pastrnak, but that the Bruins would be better off if he didn't do. Right? The list of players with, like, shift lengths over a minute, you know, I always say that's not really a list you want to be on unless you're Kirill Kaprizov or Connor McDavid and your fitness level is truly at freak level. But, you know, Pastrnak, Pastrnak, there's a couple details that I think a new coach ironing out with him. I just, it's one of those things I think would go a long way.
But like, don't you think a new coach is in the best position to do that?
I do. Yeah.
You know, like that's one of the reasons you make the midseason coaching change is just the fresh voice to say, hey, you need to get this in check.
Yeah, we saw it with Tocchet.
Yep.
Right. I mean, we've seen it in this market previously. So, no, I haven't been hugely impressed by Montgomery's work, just generally speaking, to be totally honest with you, despite the Bruins team success. So I don't really bat an eyelash at this one. This one seems appropriate to me.
All right. We'll take a final break here on the show. Speaking of Rick Tocchet, we played a little bit of his commentary after morning skate earlier in the show, but we'll play the full Rick Tocchet press conference.
Rich Keefe was the man who was way out ahead of it.
There we go. Shout out to Rich Keefe. You nailed it.
Killed it.
Jim Montgomery out, Joe Sacco in.
That's a heck of a scoop.
And he was
I literally wanted to give him credit because he was 6 hours ahead of all the major
insiders. He was like a long time out in front of everyone else.
Well, and people don't like, remember Frank Saravalli was so far out in front of the Pettersson extension that people like other insiders, other reporters were publishing denials, myself included, by the way, not because I was wrong, but because people were telling me like, oh, it's not that close or, you
pump
know,
the brakes. Like, yeah,
exactly. When you're that far out in front, it's nerve-wracking, and you deserve credit when you're dead on.
Rich Keefe.
Rich Keefe.
Well, way to go, Rich Keefe. Pop a cold one tonight, buddy. Yeah. You got it. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet on the other side. We'll continue to take your texts as well and look ahead to tonight's game against the New York Rangers. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here, Sportsnet 650.
Let's never play this track again.
Dom one compliment about his rejoiner choice earlier in the show, and this is how he repays me.
This is isn't this the song from the Zion rave in the Matrix? Matrix 2?
Great Matrix party. Reloaded.
What was that? Why did we?
What do you mean? What was it? Why you just said it. It was a rave.
Why did we need a Zion rave scene in The Matrix 2? That is honestly like
I think they were
in terms of 1990s film excesses.
Well, first of all,
that's like right at the top.
Clearly in the 2000s when Matrix Reloaded came out. Second of all,
yeah, Thomas.
Wow. I think they were trying to like show the joy in humanity that even in those circumstances they were capable of joy like that. Drance. That would be my interpretation of the scene. What year did it come out? I see you looking at it.
2003.
A
According to Google,
share it with
people
the class.
Were embracing their humanity in the face of robotic destruction.
Yeah, that's another. They're creating a discrepancy between the humans and the machines.
Like the machines can't have a rave.
Yeah, like machine, you never see them having a rave.
Like machines can't enjoy dropping.
If there's one thing AI is never going to replace, it's our ability to have a rave.
The writer goes on to say, but the Wachowskis just want you to vibe out and watch their exquisitely crafted and immensely expensive music video.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it was my favorite part of the movie. I'm not really going to defend it. It was kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't already shown the joy in humanity by having a character have sunglasses that don't have handles on it? Man, Oakley was doing some creative things back in the 2000s, eh?
What happened to the handle-less sunglasses? Why did that never catch on?
There was a time when they had the track stars had the Oakleys that would go over their forehead to the back of their head.
So, There was once I had a landlord, and I was communicating with their husband about fixing like a normal, this is in Toronto, I'm in my early 20s, about fixing like a basic thing, like maybe it was the sink or something that was leaking, and it had been leaking for like 10 days and they hadn't. And finally the guy emails me back, and I read the email as if he'd called me Mitch, even though my name is clearly Tom and in my email signature, but he'd been referring to his build man, Mitch. And so I responded and was like, thank you for the update, Morpheus. And then it took me another 3 weeks to get my, to get my sink fixed.
That's the most Thomas Drantz story.
That classic Drantz charm.
Anyway, that's,
well, that's good.
Did he look like Lawrence Fishburne?
No. I want to pivot to talking about this Canucks season.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Because, you know, I mentioned a sense of joylessness around watching this team play yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I just want to recap for everybody. Like, since September, all that we've seen this team deal with and individuals on this team deal with, well outside the scope of your normal hockey stuff, right? So, in August, anyway, Dakota Joshua is diagnosed with testicular cancer,
mm-hmm.
and has surgery to, you know, deal with that. Ends up missing an indefinite period of time to begin the season. It ends up being 15 games. Thatcher Demko tells us that he'd had another surgery during the offseason, but also that he's dealing with, you know, what's since been reported to be a popliteus injury. A completely unprecedented injury for a hockey player or a goaltender. We've never seen this before in the annals of hockey and hockey sports science. About a week and a bit into the season, Derek Forbert takes a leave of absence from the team because of the death of his father.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get the Tanner Jeannot hit on Brock Besser. And look, Besser seems to be progressing. The team's never confirmed whether or not it's a concussion, but let's be real. That's the sort of hit that can threaten or severely impact a career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not we're fortunate enough to have Besser only miss 2 weeks, that's a scary, scary hit. A dangerous, reckless hit, period. And now we're here with JT Miller taking an indefinite leave of absence for undisclosed reasons and respecting his privacy and wishing him and his family the best. That's
a lot.
That's like 20% of the roster that's dealt with significant, like life-altering events away from the rink. You know, we're focused on the team's performance, but man, the emotional toll of just yep. all of this and sort of the collection of it. I just wanted to lay it out in full because it's not something we talk a fair bit, I think, about like, hey, the emotional dealing with this emotionally in the game, like that could be hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked to Landon Ferraro in the second segment about sort of the real human impact, right? That obviously these are players, these are pros, but they're also people. They're also human beings with real lives and real feelings and real emotions that impact performance. It's hard to show up every day no matter what you're doing, especially when you're playing pro hockey in front of tens of thousands of paying customers. Wild. Like, honestly, it actually reminds me a little bit like of that sort of run from 08 to 2011 that the team went through where like Luc Bourdon passed away, Pavel Dimitra,
mm-hmm. obviously passed away. You had Taylor Pyatt's, was it his partner?
I think it was his fiance.
His fiance,
yeah,
in the Caribbean passed away. You had the Rick Rippon situation. Like, the amount of just horrible real life things that afflicted that team. Like, I you know, at the time, I remember thinking, man, I've never seen a run like this. I feel like we're, it's not to that extent, because, you know, we haven't had a Canucks player or prospect tragically pass, but I mean, there's an echo to it, right? Where it's just like this massive emotional load that must be on this team right now that, you know, I just think we need to contextualize and think of and reflect on a little bit as we discuss sort of what we've been talking about with, like, hey, the vibe seems...
Well, exactly.
How could they not be?
That's a huge part of that conversation.
How could they not
be? As we talk about, like, it's been a little joyless and the players are, like,
it's
going
heavy,
through
man.
It. That probably goes a long way, right, to explaining it. There's been a lot. We're 17 games into the season.
Yeah.
And all those things that you laid out have already happened, right? Like, that's a lot to cram into.
Yeah.
And then the Canucks
have dealt with, like, a decade in 17
yeah.
games.
And then I would even throw out, I mean, you know, Elias Pettersson going through it, right? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's more of a normal course of business type of thing, even though it was more prolonged. But there's just a lot of stuff that the players have had to deal with. And man, again, if they can have a performance at some point, I mean, I guess, as I said earlier in the show, even just a win, like a win, any way you get it tonight, I got to imagine would feel absolutely amazing for this group, considering everything that they've dealt with so far. And they've dealt with today already.
And the Rangers have been a little flat. The results don't show it, but the Rangers have been a little flat. This is still a team you can generate against. This is still a team you can get. So, you know, not to underplay how dangerous they are. This is, in my opinion, the best power play in the league right now. And in my opinion, the best goaltender in the league right now. And that's not even opinion. That's just fact. Shesterkin is the best goaltender in the league right now. So I don't want to short sell just how dangerous an opponent the Rangers are, but they do struggle to defend. This Canucks team should be able to generate against them. There is some speed issues down the middle that the Canucks can, you know, harder to do without Miller's quickness in the lineup, obviously. But, I mean, there is a way for the Canucks to play their game tonight and come out with a big win. And, man, that could be a huge turning point in the season, frankly, especially, you know, as you begin to get Demko back and Besser back and hopefully soon Miller back, too. You know, it's a tough burden that's been placed on this group of players right now.
Now, just as a follow-up to the JT Miller situation, again, working with what limited information we do have, the NHL media site where they published the roster...
Yeah, has removed him from the roster.
Yeah, so that... I mean, one, that's information in and of itself. He's not currently listed on the roster, and there's only a handful of mechanisms for doing that, right? You'd be more of an expert on this than I would, of all the different CBA things.
I mean, he's non-roster in some capacity.
Yeah.
He's not IR, because
no.
IR would be listed on the media site as Derek Forbert is. But I can't tell you more than that. He's off roster in some capacity, and perhaps there's some kind of an agreement. And, like, it might be bespoke. Honestly, it might be bespoke. We do sometimes see the league make accommodations for extraordinary circumstances. You know, I've heard back from the NHLPA while we're during the show, and they're declining to confirm whether or not he's in the player assistance program. Which, likewise, the team you heard Rick Tocchet do so. Spokespeople from the team also declining to confirm. So we don't know exactly what's going on, even from just like a basic roster mechanics standpoint, but. You know, Abbotsford played in Bakersfield, California last night. There's no direct flights. Like, even if DeHarnay can't go tonight, you're probably playing a man short.
Yeah.
And if he can, you're going 11-7. But I don't see a way that they're getting an extra forward up here unless they're traveling same day, not direct. I mean, I guess you could drive to Ontario or take a connecting flight through like Bellingham or something. I mean, it's brutal. You're not going to put a four. You're not going to put a
and then ask them, get them here and then ask them to play.
You're not going to put an American League winner a winger into the lineup in those circumstances. No chance.
Yeah, so basically the upshot is they have a roster spot open without doing anything else.
No chance. That was too confident, but yeah. I would be surprised.
They have a roster spot open without doing anything else, right? Because other options would include, you know, putting Brock Besser on IR to open up a roster spot, right? Which hasn't happened yet, despite him missing games. So they do have a roster spot available. That looms large going into the road trip, right? A 6-game road trip that they have coming up. So even if they're not able to add an extra forward for tonight's game, maybe it gives them a little bit of flexibility before they head out on the road. And of course, that starts on the weekend against Ottawa. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as I mentioned, let's hear, we played a little bit of the JT Miller stuff, but some other commentary from Rick Tocchet as well. So let's hear from the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet.
Well, it's just, you know, you read the statement. It's indefinite in the sense we don't know how long. You know, respect the privacy of Millsy. It's got nothing to do with the, don't speculate, please, guys. It's nothing to do with the benching. So I appreciate not the speculation. And, you know, he's a family member here. We're going to support him.
Can you feel that there was some stuff weighing on him during the last little bit here?
Listen, Millsy is his worst critic. Guy wears the heart on his sleeve. He's our FU. Like he's the guy that is an emotional leader. So he takes upon himself to do it every night, and it's hard to do. So no, I thought just like last year, he's a big part of our team. Since I've been here, he's unreal. Played great hockey. Like I'm lucky to have him.
Rick, did this catch you off guard?
What's that?
Did JT's leave catch you off guard in the organization?
I mean, anytime something like that happens, was it off guard? You just deal with things. You know, that's what we do. We're hockey players. We're hockey coaches. You deal with certain things. You know, Garland might have a baby today, so whether he plays tonight, we'll deal with it. It's, you know, things that come up during the season that you deal with.
To help avoid any speculation, can you just clarify, is this a team-related leave or is this the league and the Players Association?
I mean, like I said, just read the statement. I mean, I'm not going to get into it, honestly, but I respect the question, but yeah.
Did he come to you saying that he needed break?
What's that? Like, we talked yesterday.
Yeah. How would you describe your relationship with JT?
I would ask him, but great. He's played his best. He's played great for me. I'm lucky to have him.
How different is this compared to what you went through a year ago? You guys were remarkably healthy all year until maybe Thatcher got hurt at the end. This year you haven't had Thatcher. You know, Brock's out now. And JT, how different is this kind of adversity?
Well, we've dealt with a lot of stuff. Dakota's cancer. There's a lot of stuff that's thrown this team. But like I said, we got a pretty good record considering a lot of stuff. Yeah, do we know we're not playing great hockey? Spots that we are playing great hockey. Some spots we're not. And you look around the league, teams are going through it. And we're a resilient group. And there's going to be some guys that we're going to rely on, obviously, to get their game going. But also some good young players here that get a chance to play. I think that's it's a positive in that respect.
If Carly can't go, is Darren A. available, or would you have to go under the...
That's a good question. I don't know. I have to talk to Vinny. He skated today, so I don't know how he felt. So I'll get to him.
Rick, what's the update with Brock? How far along is he in protocol?
Him and Forzy skated today. So that's a positive. So, you know, anytime you throw a bunch of skates together, then whether you get close, you know the way it works.
We'll see Thatcher occasionally. Where's Thatcher at? Might be going that 6-game road trip.
Yeah, he's coming on the trip for sure. He's, I don't know, you guys watch him in practice. He's looking really good. So, like I said, he's throwing a lot of good practices together. And like I said, I don't know when he's going to play, but I know he's throwing a lot of good stuff together.
Archer's tonight?
Yeah, Artie's in tonight.
You mentioned your words, he's our FU. So we know how good JT is on the ice, but how do you replace that emotional piece?
Well, I'd like to see 5 or 10% FU at our other players tonight. Like, everybody can supply it. You're not going to get 100% from guys in the sense that you're going to get 100% effort, but I'm saying an FU. Like, everybody gives 5 or 10%. That's how you make up for in the short term. You know, you know Millsy, you know, there's a reason why people chant his name.
Seems like that's a bit of a line to ride. You want them to give that FU, but you also don't want them to be taking careless penalties.
Well, yeah, FU is not hooking and holding. FU's, you know, no, it's a good question, though. No, FU's getting on people, get above, change in the right way, not changing the way back, you know, and letting the other team score. That FU is, you know, cleaning your stuff before the next guy goes on the ice. Don't hand off your crap to somebody else. I think that's the FU I'm talking about.
Rick, Rick, where do you think your 5-on-5 game is at right now? You were so good last year. You haven't forgotten how to coach. Your guys haven't forgotten. Can they get bogged down in the details sometimes where they forget the natural aspect of the game?
Well, I mean, if you look, I think we're one of the best teams at retrievals and possession time. So obviously we're not, you know, we're not scoring right now, but I think that's a positive. To me, it's the other end. You know, we're our retrieval rate is not good in our own end, which we were really good last year. So not really about the offense because we're getting the puck. Obviously, we got to create more. But to me, it's the defensive end because we were very good at getting that puck, winning a puck battle or getting that puck out. So we got a lot of juice the other way. Now we're defending so much. Now when we get it, we're tired. So that's the FU I'm talking in our own end and without the puck. That's the stuff that we got to get better as a team and as individuals.
With JT, how much of what he's dealing with is physical versus mental?
Like I said, it's in the statement. You know, I don't want to speculate.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after the team had their game day skate earlier today. They're taking on the Rangers tonight. And just to follow up on our conversation about the roster mechanics and the possibility of calling somebody up from the AHL, as a couple of listeners pointed out,
they're actually playing right now.
Well, they finished. They're done now. It's in the books. 4-2 win for Abbotsford and Bakersfield. But yes, the rare Tuesday a.m. Pacific time AHL game. So
anyone,
that's not going to happen.
Anyone conspicuously absent from the lineup?
Neil Zaman played, and he recorded an assist in the third period, so he wasn't even like yanked out.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So, and I was thinking about this. Baines was at game day skate, right? Like the roster move happened, but obviously there was some anticipation getting him to Vancouver for the morning skate, right? So if they had wanted to do the same thing with Neil Zaman yesterday, you figure they could have. Maybe it's because there's the Connor Garland thing is a little unexpected. Who knows? But anyways, yeah, it doesn't they already played a game, everyone with Abbotsford. So it doesn't seem like that will be a possibility for tonight, but maybe going out onto the road trip. And also Jay and New West texts in, I never heard so many FUs in one presser. Yeah, that was a very popular expression at the presser today.
Well, when you go in on the forecheck, right, there's an F1, an F2, an F3. And when JT Miller's on,
there's an FU.
That's the fourth type of forward.
New position. They're trailblazing here in Vancouver. The FU. Big on tape. They always got to know where the FU is. So that's like we talked about this with Landon earlier in the show, right? The idea of, you know, it's a classic thing. Next man up. Everyone's got to do a little bit more. I do think the player most in the spotlight now, like, yeah, Quinn Hughes is their best player. He's got to be excellent. But it's Elias Pettersson. You lose your other top center, the guy who is supposed to be a play driver, an all situations force for you. We're already expecting a lot from Elias Pettersson. I do think there's been some positive signs, even if he's still well off what he can do at the peak of his powers. I mean, this is obvious, but now is the time for a signature Elias Pettersson game, a string of signature Elias Pettersson games, a signature Elias Pettersson stretch where he reminds everyone, not just what it looks like when he's taking those baby steps to get back to being the old Elias Pettersson, but we've seen him carry this team offensively for, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time, right? This is why you have multiple star players, right? So they can pick up the slack if one of them is out of the lineup, and this is the time. It is now for Elias Pettersson to be the best forward on the ice on a consistent basis for the Canucks.
They're going to need him to be, right? It's not even a matter of can he do it. It's like this team's going to need Pettersson to be at that level. You know, when we think about this team and we think about the margin for error, right? I talked a lot about how I thought this was a team with some margin for error going into the season. And I think that has proven itself given Demko's protracted absence, given Besser's recent absence, given Dakota Joshua's absence, given the fact that the team hasn't necessarily had the bounces in their favor the way they did last year. They're still second in the Pacific.
Poor performance from Elias Pettersson for much of the time.
Yeah, we've seen this team prove that they have a really high floor.
Yep.
Right? There's a floor to this team that has kept them in the mix. But I think now we are getting to the point where that floor is going to be in question, right? And not because of how this team's playing or performing simply due to the weight of how many elite players can you live without before that floor starts to sink? I think we at least are possibly there. Very possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this team's vaunted forward depth, for example, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at Lekkerimäki in the top nine, right? You're looking at only maybe having 11 forward. Like, it's going to look very
different. First power play unit. These are all good players, but Pugh Suter, DeBrusk, Lekkerimäki, who has none of those guys as of what, 10 days ago,
right,
were on the first power play unit.
Yeah, especially if you have to, you know, play without Garland tonight. So, you know, this might be a game where the Canucks don't have their usual floor, right? And then going forward, we don't know how long Miller will be absent, but, you know, well, the logic of this team is you have enough forward depth to provide some complementary scoring around sort of a quartet of elite players in Hughes, Demko, Pettersson, and Miller, and a couple of other sort of fringy core pieces that are still, you know, top of the line,
really good players,
guys,
yeah.
Hronek, Garland,
Besser,
and DeBrusk, right? And you're sort of down to Hronek, DeBrusk, potentially tonight, Garland, we'll see, and two of the elite players.
Pettersson.
So, you know, Hughes and if the Canucks win tonight, it's going to be because Hughes and Pettersson go out and win the game. Like, that just is what it is. And going forward, you know, look, your goal probably for this road trip now, and our expectations for this team on this road trip now, is like you come back with 7 or 8 points in six, absent JT Miller from the lineup. And, you know, we'll see when Demko comes back, but even then, working Demko in the lineup, like we've seen with Dakota Joshua, for example, I don't know if you noticed this, there was a play against Nashville. He gets a puck in sort of the high slot, and he sort of skated out of the danger area with it. It's like, Dakota Joshua is such a smart player and plays such a north-south game. That's just timing. That's like, it's going to take him a bit to return to peak performance, right? And that's fine. We all knew that. We all should know that and accept that. Yes.
Yeah.
And that, but it's going to be for Demko too.
Yep.
So, you know, right now the team's like short-term goal is kind of just like tread water, keep pace, and we'll sort of see when the pieces return.
Don't let the bottom fall out.
Yeah. And they should be able to do it, but it's going to require gargantuan efforts from, you know, their top guys that are still available to them just to maintain that level. It would be my suspicion. And if they are able to go on a run, man, that would be incredible.
We'll see how it starts tonight when they take on the New York Rangers. We will be back tomorrow. We'll do the crossover. We'll talk to our guy Jason Bukla here on a Wednesday on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.